We just came out of the Christmas season. We're still in the Christmas season. We'll remain there for a couple of weeks. But if you looked at your store shelves, it happens usually about the end of October. Sometimes beginning of November, seems to happen earlier year after year. All Christmas store shelves, right when you walk in the door, right at the beginning, at every big box retailer, every department store, they have this kind of stuff laid out. It's always like the gift sets, the lotion sets, the candy sets, the candle sets. And it's those gifts that you get for people that you feel super obligated to get something for, but you have no idea what to get them because you don't really know them that well, right? On a completely unrelated note, thank you guys so much for the candles. We really appreciate it. They were lovely. But this is what the front of every store looks like the entire month of November, the entire month of December. And then something happens. Something happens. It must happen overnight, or it happens the day after Christmas. But under the cloak of darkness, everything in the front of the store changes. And if you go in to any big box retailer, any department store, starting sometime this week, definitely sometime next week, all the shelves now look like this. There are vitamins, there are supplements, there's whey protein powder in 5-gallon drums, there are tennis shoes, there is activewear, because this is going to be the year that you get in shape, right? The number one New Year's resolution, the number one thing everyone resolves to do, right, is that I'm going to lose weight, I'm going to get in shape, I'm going to exercise. And so they twist that, and they make sure when you walk into a store, that's the first thing that you see. Now, some of you, especially the teachers that are coming to the Sunday school teachers meeting and the Bible fellowship teachers meeting, you may think this is your idea of exercise, that you just simply walk with the Lord daily. That is not exercise. You don't burn calories. It's very important, but you do not burn calories doing that. And some of you will start an exercise plan. You will start a new year, new you plan, but the first thing you'll do, and you'll probably do it this week, you've probably already started doing it, is you will start to clean out your house. Now, the smart thing to do, if all this stuff is going to kill you, the smart thing to do would be to throw it away, right? But we don't do that. We do this. Need to start eating more healthy, but first I need to eat all the junk food in the house so that it's not there to tempt me anymore, right? That's what we do. And that's what we'll spend this week doing. We'll prep for the diet. We'll prep for January 1st or January 2nd. Or some of you guys, you take the first week off and you'll start on like the 7th or the 8th. And just eat all the junk food, right? That way it won't be there anymore. But the deal with any New Year's resolution and the deal with resolving to do anything, whether it's to lose weight or be better at this or to be better at that, is that you cannot hold on to the things that hold you back. And this is a prime example of simply holding on to the things that hold you back. I want to get in shape. I want to lose weight. But I need to take care of these things first because they're here and I wouldn't want to waste them. With every new year, we think about a reset. You know, we're just going from any other Sunday to any other Monday. We're just turning the page on a month. But for whatever reason, in our Western culture, a new year is a new start. And this new year, and since it's New Year's Eve and everyone will celebrate in one form or fashion this evening, we're going to talk about the new year being a reset. It can be a reset for you spiritually. It can be a reset for our church as we, you know, have all these meetings. You know, what are we going to do for the new year? Because what happened when Jesus was born, the season that we're just kind of coming out of celebrating, Jesus turned everything on its ear. The arrival of Jesus messed everything up for the people, and in turn introduced something new. And that was confusing for a lot of folks to figure out because they thought maybe it was just fixing something, or maybe it was a new version of something, or maybe he was just a different kind of king that was going to rule in the same way. But Jesus and his arrival changed something and ushered in something new. He ushered in a bit of a religious reset for the culture and for the temple. And he ushered in an opportunity for us to have a reset. So as we look at this new year, how does Jesus' arrival give us a reset? A reset personally or even for the church? Because I would like in 2018... This is just these are not my New Year's resolutions, but these are just my New Year's thoughts. I would like for people that are associated with this church to grow deeper in their faith. Would anyone else like to see that? That would be kind of cool. If people that were here with us would, a couple of you want that? That's cool. I'll pray for the rest of y'all. I would like more people to come to our church. I like it here. I think other people would like it here. So I would let anybody else want to see more people come to our, just a few of you. Okay, that's good. And I would, most importantly, I would like for people that do not have an understanding of who Jesus is and what they did for them, I would like more people to have an understanding of that, right? So if that is truly a goal for this year or any year, how do we accomplish that? Well, it seems like we would have to tell people about church. It seems like we would have to tell people about what's going on, but I don't know your experience, but my experience is some people are resistant to church. Anybody else encounter that, where some folks are resistant to church? But generally, people are not resistant. This has only been my experience. I know that there's a few out there, and I know there's always an exception. My experience has been people are not resistant to Jesus. I never invite someone to church, and they say, sorry, I'm not really about Jesus. The whole love people, do good things, and be a good person, I'm not really about that. They never give me that response, right? It usually has something to do with one of you in here, actually, is the reason that they won't be a part of what we're doing. Because what is the church? How do we define the church? The church is simply a group of people following a man that we believe sent by God, who was God, to explain God, to clear the path to God. That's what we talk about at Christmas time, right? Emmanuel, God with us, Jesus cleared the path so we can have access to the Creator. The priesthood of all believers is what we call that. So if they're not necessarily resisting Jesus, what is it that they're resisting? You know, the first 300 years of church history, as the early church went through persecution, the likes of which we've never experienced, they were not persecuting the church for how they acted. They were not persecuting the church for their music or being weird or what they wore or even like being too judgmental. The early church got persecuted for one reason and one reason only. And that was because they acknowledged Jesus as their king. Not Caesar, not Nero, not any of those other guys, but they acknowledged Jesus as their king, and that's what rocked the boat. That's what kicked everything up. And they would say, you know what, those Christian folks, they're good neighbors, they're good employees, they're good bosses. Hope my son marries one, but I don't agree with the whole Jesus is king thing. That was why the church got persecuted. So why do people in 2017... people in 2018 perhaps resist what we have going on? And I believe, much like starting anything else, it's because sometimes the church holds on to things that holds it back. Everything we're going to look at today is something that we've looked at this past year, because sometimes you need a refresher as part of a reset. So we're just going to look at some things that kind of make up the church and make up this reset as we look into a new year. One of the things we looked at this year when we talked about Scripture, we talked about the temple model. We did a month or so ago, or 2 months ago. The temple model was something that not just Jewish people followed, but that all faith systems had at some point. And the temple model was based on always a sacred place, a sacred text, sacred men, never women, and scared people. And so the temple model revolved around, do this or God will get you. Here are the things you need to do, and the sacred men in the sacred place would tell you the things that you need to do out of the sacred text, and they would scare you into doing them, because if you don't, God will get you. That's how the temple model works. And all of your time, at least all of your spiritual time, all of your religious time, was spent just trying to fix things between you and God. That's what you did at the temple. You came, you worshiped, you sacrificed, you just tried to fix things between you and God. But then Jesus came, and Jesus cleared the path between man and God, humanity and God. So the arrival of Jesus signaled the end of the temple model, a reset, and the start of something entirely new. And entirely for everyone. That was what Jesus told his followers before he left in Acts. He said, you're going to become my witnesses, not just here in Jerusalem. Hey guys, we all love Jerusalem. You're going to go other places. You're going to go beyond Jerusalem. You're going to Judea. You're going to go to Samaria. You know what's in Samaria? Samaritans. You're not going to like it, but that's where you're going to go. This was a new thing ushered in, not just for sacred people in a sacred place, but for everyone. Jesus ushered in a new movement. No more sacred places. You guys know this story. When the disciples were walking with Jesus, they were walking to Caesarea Philippi. And maybe because they were walking in a town that was named for a king, they kind of start asking, Jesus has the conversation, you know, people are talking about me, I've done some stuff, who do people say that I am? And the disciples, kind of, you know, who's going to be the first one to talk? Well, some people say you're a prophet, an incarnation, maybe you're John the Baptist, we don't know. Okay, guys, who do you say that I am? And of course, Peter boldly steps up, and we know his response. It's in Matthew chapter 16. He says, "You are the Christ, you're the Son of God, you're the Messiah, you're the one we've been waiting for." And Jesus says, "You nailed it. God must have given you that." And in Matthew 16, 18, Jesus says to Peter, "I tell you, you are Peter, on this rock I will build my church." On the understanding that I am in fact the Messiah, the Son of God, the one that everyone has been waiting on, that is the foundation in which I am going to build my church. And when we talked about this before, we talked about that word church, ecclesia. A gathering, an assembly. It has nothing to do with a building. Jesus never predicted this building, but he predicted these people. Not a sacred place, a new movement, an assembly of those gathered, and our only notion is that Jesus is the Son of God. And that is the foundation of everything we do. Not a place, but a people gathered in the name of Jesus. And when the church becomes about anything other than that, we lose our influence. We become resistible. Jesus ushered in a new meaning. He ushered in a new meaning. In Matthew chapter 5, verse 17, he says, "Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them." Jesus says, and this is why the Christmas story is so beautiful. Jesus says, every prophet was talking about me. Every promise, yeah, that was about me. Every law is complete with me. And when you look at the Old Testament, you should see me. And when you look at my church and when you look at my ecclesia, my gathering, wherever it happens to be, because there aren't any more sacred places anymore, you should see me. One of the things that makes the church resistible oftentimes is when the church becomes rooted in something besides Jesus. Or it becomes rooted in something, Jesus plus something. Jesus said, "I came for a new movement. This is now about me." The law and the prophets served as this cocoon. It served as these training wheels into which this thing grew in, and now I am here. The path to God has been created, and now this is about me. And so the church is rooted in Jesus. Perhaps one of the most significant things that Jesus did is he ushered in a new ethic. Jesus turned the leadership paradigm upside down. He confused everyone because we had sacred places, we had sacred texts, and we had very, very sacred people. But in John chapter 13, verse 34, he says, "A new commandment I give you," he's talking to his disciples, he says, "that you love one another just as I have loved you, you also are to love one another." Now, the context of this story is very significant because he doesn't say, as I'm going to love you, talking about, you know, going to the cross and the things he was going to do for them. That would come later. As I have loved you, this is what you're supposed to do for others. This comes at a portion of the story where Jesus has just removed his rabbi's garment. He has stooped down in front of them and he has washed their dirty, stinky feet. And he says, this is how I expect you to love people. Not random acts of kindness, those are fine, but this is the servant mentality that I want you to have. And it made them so uncomfortable. The hands that had healed people, the hands that had made the blind to see and the lame to walk, were washing their dirty feet. God in a body was stooped down in front of them, humbling himself. Jesus was doing for them what they wouldn't do for one another. You didn't wash your friend's feet. Servants did that. Slaves did that. And Jesus says, "This thing I've done, that's what I want you to do for other people." It's as if he looked into a bit of a crystal ball and said, "You know what, guys? You have walked with me and some really cool stuff is going to happen the next few days, the next few weeks. And the church is going to explode because I'm going to defeat death." I'll tell you about that in a minute. And in the early church, the disciples, "You guys are going to be rock stars." Peter, James, John, all those guys, they started the churches. They had talked to Jesus. They were the ones. I mean, they had authority. Jesus says, just when you think you're a big shot, just when the early church and the people are probably puffing you up because you're doing such a really good job, wash more feet. Get on your knees and wash more feet. Because the greatest among you has stooped down and done that, and that's what I expect you to do for other people. And the church becomes irresistible when the church stoops down and washes more feet. He follows that up in verse 35. He says, "By this all people will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another." Not by how well you keep the law or by how well you know the sacred texts, but by how you love, by how many feet you wash. That's how people will know that you're part of this, that you're part of my ecclesia, my gathering, my church. That your vertical relationship with God, that you spent so much time in the sacred temple trying to fix, will now be measured by your horizontal relationship with other people. And just how significant is the horizontal when it comes to the vertical? How significant is our relationship to other people as it pertains to our relationship with God? Again, when Jesus is speaking in Matthew chapter 5, verse 23, he says, "So if you're offering your gift at the altar," so if you are at the temple, if you are doing the thing that you are supposed to do by the law to make things right between you and God, if you're at the temple, gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come offer your gift. The relationship with other people was of such significance that Jesus says, if you're at the temple fixing things between you and God, God can wait. Go fix things with your brother first. And that was a huge shift from the temple model, because the people in the temple kept the law, and they kept the people in spite of the law, and they kept the law in spite of the people, and they kept the law at the expense of the people. And Jesus says, go fix things with the people. That's how you'll fix things with me. And people will know you love me by how your relationship works with other people. And Jesus ushered in a new covenant. Covenant, just a special word for an arrangement or a promise. He ushered in a new covenant, and he did this over something that we tend to gloss over. He did this with Passover. Now, we read through the Last Supper and the Lord's Supper, something we'll celebrate today. We read through it 2,000 years removed from the story. We read through it as Gentiles. But Jesus was celebrating the Passover with his friends, with his Jewish friends. And the Passover was the most significant Jewish celebration of all their festivals, of all their feasts. They'd been celebrating it for over 1,000 years. It represented something so significant to them. And in a moment, Jesus made the Passover about himself. And that was, we can't even comprehend to a Jewish audience of Jewish friends what that would have meant to them. It would have been the same as if me, as your kind and benevolent leader, if next Christmas we're planning our Christmas services and I say, you know what, guys? This year, the theme of Advent, the theme of Christmas, Pastor John. Christmas this year is going to be all about me because I am your leader. And in fact, every subsequent Christmas that you ever celebrate, every wreath you hang, every light you turn on, every candle that you light, think of me. Now that's hopefully that sounds weird. But that was the significance. He took their most significant holiday, their most significant celebration. He said, guys, this is about me now. Forget everything you know about it. In Luke chapter 22, it says, Jesus took the bread, the Passover bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it. He gave it to him, saying, this is my body, which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me. And they've got to be thinking, Jesus, this is bread. This is Passover bread. This is what we do. We don't understand what you're saying. It's like, no, this is my body. And every time you share the Passover meal, the meal of such significance to you, it's about me now. Do it in remembrance of me. Passover being something that represented the Jewish people and their deliverance from Egypt, the greatest thing that God had done for their people, pulling them out of slavery, sparing their children death as they passed through and the slaughter of the Egyptian firstborns. That was the celebration. And Jesus said, no, it's mine now. This is true deliverance. This is my body broken for you. And they've got to be thinking, Jesus, we've been very flexible. We've allowed for a lot of things, and most people hate us at this point. The miracles, they've been cool. Raising people from the dead, mad props. But Passover? Maybe we give you like the day after Passover, like you can have like Boxing Day. But Passover? Yes. The most significant celebration of your faith is now about me. It continues on in verse 20 and says, "And likewise the cup, after they had eaten, this is the cup poured out for you. It's a new covenant in my blood. Every time you do this, you think of me." It's a reset. It's a reminder not just of how I'm going to die. We tend to think of communion as a remembrance of how Jesus died and the sacrifice he made for our sins, and that is significant. But the Lord's Supper is a reminder of how Jesus lived. A reminder that I have lived a certain way and I have shown you a certain way of living, and every time you have this meal, remember me. Remember what I've taught you. Remember not to let temple thinking creep into what I've done. Remember, don't make this about anything other than me. Remember, don't root your faith or your salvation or your church or your laws in anything other than me, because this is new. In remembrance of me. Jesus took all of the law, all of the commandments, and he condensed them down to one verb, and that was love. For God, for your friends, and perhaps most peculiarly, for your enemies. The path to God has been cleared. No more sacred spaces, no more sacred men. And don't let my church, my ecclesia, my gathering become about anything except this. My life, my teachings, the things I did for you, the way that the greatest among you humbled himself, and my sacrifice for you. That's what this is about. And on your best day, when you think you are a big shot, wash more feet. Because that's what this is about. When we reset every year, oftentimes, if we go back to the fitness and exercise, We live very healthily most of the time. Most of us are in pretty decent health. And then late October comes and November comes and we start eating like it's a contest. And we go through the holidays and it's gross, right? And then January 1st comes and there's a reset. There's an opportunity to say, you know what? I know what I've done. And now it's time to correct and go a different direction. And so often is the case with our faith. We come to church, we're motivated to be a certain way, we're motivated to do certain things, and then things come up. Our faith becomes rooted in other things. Our faith becomes rooted in details and rooted in laws and rooted in sacred people and sacred spaces. And every time we approach the table, every time we share in this meal, it's an opportunity for a reset. An opportunity to say, Jesus did this a certain way. Jesus showed us to do this a certain way. That our relationship with God is measured by our relationship with the people outside these walls. So this is our opportunity for a reset.